Aloha and welcome to Music View. Tonight, Timmy Summers' guest is Members of the Falls. This is a repeat of an earlier broadcast.
Hi, this is Tim Sommer, and we're here with another edition of Music View. Our guest tonight is Mark E. Smith of The Fall. Isn't that right?
Good evening, yes.
And can you please tell me who isn't here from The Fall?
Isn't? There's Mark Riley, who plays guitar. And there's Steve Hanley, who plays the bass. There's Carl Burns on the drums, and Craig Scanlon on another guitar.
Now, you've just released Slates, which is a 10-inch EP on American Rough Trade. It's pretty available. Before that, you released Grotesque, also on American Rough Trade. And your other American release was Live at the Witch Trials, which came out on IRS.
Yeah.
What brings you to America right now, and how long are you here for?
Oh, well, we're here for about 6 weeks. We're doing the East, the West, and the South. But the reason we're here is to hone in our acts a bit more and sort of get across to a few more people. That Britain was boring us for a while, so we decided not to play any gigs. So the best alternative was to go... We went to Germany, and now we're in America.
What was it? What has been going on in Britain that particularly hasn't made it a good environment for you?
Oh, it's a good environment. It's just become very safe. I mean, that's where our root support is, Britain. But there's a lot of rubbish going down now. It's hard to explain, really. But we were going out. Our only sort of choice is to go out and play to people who know The Fall inside out.
Yeah.
Not play at all, you know. Or,
and that in itself is safe.
Yeah. I mean, it's nothing to sort of criticise. But I thought change was needed for the band to keep it interested, rather than not sort of playing.
I'm interested sort of in the evolution of The Fall's approach, because I was trying to describe it to a friend, and I was saying that you sort of play music as if you invented it, the whole form of music, because it's not quite like... I find it really beyond description. It's almost a pure sort of stream of consciousness type thing. And in the last couple of releases, it's really been honed where it wasn't sort of on Live at the Witch Trials.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree though, yeah. But, the main reason was that when I formed The Fall, the ultimate goal was like to sort of have a group that was organic, that can just go up there and do various things and sort of could cope with another discipline as well. You know, I wanted it to be free-form with discipline, which is sort of an easy thing to say. Most bands would claim to be that, but in fact they're not, you know. It's just getting a balance.
Now, you formed the band in Manchester?
Yeah.
About how long ago?
It's about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. About beginning of 77.
And personnel has pretty much shifted very... Completely,
yeah, I mean,
since then.
Yeah, it's not so much as everybody makes out, but we had a high turnover because of sort of financial problems and things like that.
Some people seem to have made a lot of the fact that you fire members at age 20, but that's not quite true, is it?
Well, that is a lie, yeah. It's a coincidence that most of them left when they were about that age.
Yeah.
And they start wanting to be sort of in bands as opposed to The Fall. I think that might be a lot what you're saying there about the music sounds different. Is a lot might be to do with the fact that we are sort of all non-musicians. I mean, I write a lot of the music and I can't play a lot of chords or anything. So, obviously I think most people write from what is in the head, you know, and that's why it became more honed, I think, because Slates is like exactly as it sounded in the head when we were writing it.
And I think it's probably very rare that a band can get that across pretty much intact.
That might be true, yeah. But, I mean, there again, you know, you have a lot of disadvantages doing that, like high turnover of members and lack of success and stuff like that. But it's great. It's worked out well.
Is it difficult getting a unity of thinking amongst the members?
It's not now. I mean, I thought it was an impossible thing to attain. But I think we're nearly there.
It seems that there seemed to be a real unspoken sort of communication between the band on stage. I mean, it's not like anyone directly looks over at each other, but sort of the songs sort of tumble from one song into another song, and there doesn't seem to be a real sort of idea of anyone taking charge or anyone making any, pulling any gestures or anything.
Yeah, I mean, The Fall was never like that, you know, years ago. It was one person was good on the night, and you know, the rest of the band would follow him, you know, or her.
What was it in Manchester that sort of, what was going on musically in Manchester about the time The Fall came together?
There was nothing really. There was just about this, things like the Buzzcocks and that, which were just like sort of sub-pop bands.
Now, was Steve Garvey of the Buzzcocks once in The Fall?
No, he was our roadie.
Because it had been reported erroneously, I guess, here that...
It was a... You get to find that after a bit with the rock press, you know, most of the things they print are wrong. It's hard to explain to somebody who isn't in a band, but it's true, actually.
Yeah.
It is. Not evilly wrong, I mean, just incompetence wrong.
One of the things I noticed about The Fall that I think makes them almost totally unique, at least in bands I've seen, is they seem, at least on stage, almost totally egoless, and it doesn't seem to be an affected egolessness or whatever that conjugation would be.
Yeah.
But you know, some bands could pretend to be aloof, but The Fall really just seem to have almost no on-stage ego at all, but still have a lot of stage presence, a tremendous amount of stage presence.
Hmm. Yeah, well, when you are it, you don't have to affect it. I mean, I think that's one of the things. But I mean, it's, I mean, you can't describe something like that. How can you be objective about something like that?
Yeah.
It always happens. It's good. I mean, that's the way I mean, I must take responsibility for that, because, I mean, I select the people who go in the band, and you know, that is one of the sort of prerogatives of the group, you know. Because, I mean, that's why we had a high turnover, because there's a lot of people. I mean, you just get embarrassed when somebody starts. I do. I'm just like that. I'm a bit conservative like that. I just get very annoyed when people start prancing about and sort of acting like jumped up minstrels, you know. I think it's a pack of shit and should have been sort of altered a long time ago. I'm not saying all bands should be like that, but I think it is more impressive, you know. It's a lot more unique as well. It's just been, it's not being natural, obviously, but If you're trying to communicate, you know, there's no way you can get into sort of dancing about and stuff like that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you just want to make people dance, okay, you know.
And The Fall seems to have, you know, gotten to that point where just the music and the ideas become so pure. And in many ways, it's just a matter of unlearning something, I think, you know.
It's true.
It's like you're taught to act a certain way, and then it takes, you know, a long time to unlearn that.
It's very true, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, that is one. The weird thing about The Fall is we've always had good drummers. It's very strange. Like, drummers are like usually like the hardest thing in a band. Any band, even great bands, you see, you know, the drummer is usually a bit of a weak link, because you know that's how bands start. You know, the guy who is the drummer is the guy who could sort of afford the drum kit. You know,
yeah.
Most bands you see. It's really sort of a weird paradox. I mean, that's one of the philosophies of The Fall, you know, never take anything for granted. And sort of anything, you know, that is obvious will be the exact opposite. And, like, that's with The Fall. We've always had, like, brilliant musical drummers. You know, we're one of the few bands who can choose, like, from brilliant drummers, you know, and none of us are, like, great musicians or anything. That's strange. Like, you get bands where are really good, you know, and the drummer is, like, just the guy who... the last one to be considered, you know. That's weird.
It's interesting because the thing about, you know, the way The Fall have remained so pure over all their albums, because you've got bands like, the band I find almost simplest, or for me, most effective to compare you to, I think, is sort of Wire on Pink Flag. The first album is very much the same sort of purity of music, purity of noise and sound, in the sense that they seem to be doing, like what you're doing, exactly what they want to be doing and not really listening to anything or anyone, you know, a sound out of nowhere. But Wire, and I guess almost any other band that's tried to do that sort of thing, loses it after a while.
Mm. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Either because of expertise or because of exposure or something
or
like that.
Or boredom. You know, there's a lot of bands do that. They just go for novelty because they're bored or they sort of they live in the past, you know, i.e. they sort of try and reiterate what they've already said, and they get insecure if something they do sounds different from what they've done. I mean, record companies and all that sort of stuff come into that. Record company pressure, you know, band pressure, you know. In other words, they're not believing in what you've got to do. Not believing in what you've got to say is right. I've heard a lot of bands who are obviously trying to change, but I've heard a lot of records by groups that are trying to change, but the producers tried to make it like the last record, you know. The packaging has been exactly the same as the last record. I've noticed that in a lot of groups. I don't find it hard to retain it because I know what I like, you know, because, I mean, that's the basis of the Fall as well. You know, we do what we like. And that is pretty good.
And it seems that since, you know, in doing that...
Without condescending, you see, that's the important thing what a lot of experimental bands forget. You know, they're still condescending in a way because a lot of experimental bands go out and sort of say, look, you're not going to understand this. So, you know, and therefore the audience... You know, you say audiences are stupid, but they're not, you know. An audience picks that up straight away, which is why audiences prefer, like, rock and roll bands to sort of bands that are experimental. I mean, but if you can, like, what I'm trying to do with The Fall is, like, get the pure parts out of both, you know, because there is pure parts. This is a good part in discipline, you know, and knowing what you're going to do. Well, not knowing what you're going to do, but not sort of losing your nerve and things like that. Yeah, because it's not rehearsed.
When the Fall's avoidance of being pigeonholed the Fall lets their feelings dictate them, is basically what I'm saying, and in avoiding pigeonholing and everything, how have you avoided the industry and gig promoters or record companies, etc., from getting in your way? Isn't that usually what ruins the dream or something like that?
Well, we see, we're a bit strange in a way because we're from the north of England, you see, and we've got a very sort of, it sounds a cliche, but we have got a very working class attitude whereby we don't sort of take crap for the sake of it, you know. We don't sort of think it is a big deal to sort of be in a band, because in the north of England, you know, people who, you know, stars and that thing are sort of looked down on because it is so far away from the average sort of man's sort of day-to-day existence. I mean, it's true, you know. And I've said that before, the Beatles were disliked in the north of England, you know. People just couldn't handle that four Liverpudlians did that, you know. I mean, it's a strange sus, you know, you don't understand it if you live there. And I think, but that's a great advantage of us, you know. We stay in Manchester and I like it there, you know, for some reason. I think that's a lot to do with it. I mean, you know, we go in there and, like, you get these guys, you know, making mountains out of molehills. It's very sort of... seems trivial.
We're going to get to another song right now. This one's off of Slates, and I think it's off of Slates anyway. It's An Old Lover, etc. That is the name of the song, right? It is from Slates?
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Any comments on that before we get
before to we do it? No, it's not fun.
Lover, etc. from The Fall. I hate to try to ask you about your influences or everything, because either they're obvious or they're irrelevant, but there definitely was a noticeable trend over the course of The Fall's albums. Sort of, I hate to say that you became sort of rockabilly influenced, but there is sort of a more sort of rockabilly feel to the later stuff than there was to say on anything on Live at the Witch Trials. Where did that sort of come out of?
Well, that came out of country and western music, sort of. But also, what you must remember about that is the north of England. You see, it's a very big country scene. I mean, like, country and western music is originally like a sort of it's like a Midwest sort of invention, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I mean, like, the Midwesters are like people from the north of England. I mean, that's the sort of facts, you know. I mean, a lot of them are. But I mean, a lot of folk songs, like northern folk, not like the English folk, which is like Steel Eye Span and crap like that.
Yeah.
But like, it's very similar to rockabilly. It's like, it's stuff about work and that. So we found we've sort of always been into that anyway. And there is a lot of stuff on Witch Trials which is very sort of northern folk. You know, I mean, it is undercurrent. It's like in your system somehow. But the thing about rockabilly was that, I mean, I was getting really into Johnny Cash. It was a totally accidental thing. I mean, we weren't aiming for a rockabilly sound. We were aiming for a Johnny Cash sound. It sounds incredible now. Because, I mean, we were the first English band to do a rockabilly. What they thought was rockabilly, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, when it came out in England, all the press said it was like us trying to be like fucking doo-wop, you know. That's how unhoned the press was into it, you know. I mean, I've always been into like rock and roll, you know, Jim Vincent stuff like that. Anyway, but the fact, you know, like how the rockabilly thing started was like, I was writing a lot of stories, right, and that is a good medium to get them over. The country and western thing is the only medium, you know. I mean, country and western music, you know, we all know what it is.
It's storytelling.
But I mean, it is storytelling, yeah, which is like out of the conventional rock scene, you know. The conventional rock scene never does that. It never tries to stimulate people with stories of anything, you know. And that is a good medium for us, because I mean, I found I was just writing songs like that would just sound like avant-garde messes with me telling a story over the top, you know. And like, that's, you solve all that by doing rockabilly. It's great.
Yeah. You know?
Well, it's not rockabilly really to me. See, I mean, to me, the sound I go for like is a Johnny Cash sound when we did that stuff, or like a cabaret sound, you know, like a northern cabaret sound, which is like, you know, like you're in a club with an organist and some guy doing My Way or something. It's really like a weird. It's really weird to see a guy in a Manchester pub doing My Way. It sounds really weird. It doesn't sound like Sinatra.
In a sense, it's sort of, it's real like pop art, you know, in the sense, like, you mentioned Warhol before, and not particularly in a good fashion, but how Warhol's idea of art was to take all of the art out of art, and then it becomes art. Which sounds absurd, but sort of when you say, you know, a guy in a Manchester pub doing My Way, he's taken so much of the art
trash
out of any art that could have been
He's creating, yeah. I mean, that's what I've always been into, yeah. I always try and, that's a lot of what keeps the originality of The Fall, strangely enough, is that I am very into trash music. I'm very into sort of badly produced records by, you know. This is what I mean. I mean, and that's, you could go forever about it, but, you know, that's the thing that is wrong with rock music, you know, it's just all the interest has gone out of it. I mean, it's where you get to the point like I have, you know, where all this stuff I listen to is like bad stuff, you know, what is considered bad stuff, because you can usually sort of figure out that it's going to be good, you know.
How do you keep it fresh every night, since obviously that's a very, very important part of The Fall, especially when you're doing something as extensive as, say, the 30 dates or so that you're playing in America, or is it more than that? But whatever, how do you keep something fresh? I mean, I do notice you vary your set list, but still. I mean, how do you get to the mic and say the same things, or do you not say the same things? Or?
No, I don't. I mean, that is important, you know. I really work for that, to make it different every night, or else I just wouldn't go on. That is very, you know, I have a sort of a neurotic state before we go on, where I try and compile a set, you know, that's different. And think of things to do that's different, you know, and that's where I do my work.
Right.
You know, I have this thing that I've got to do work. It doesn't matter how many people are there. Well, that's how we do it. I mean, and also we've got a very large repertoire, of songs. You know, I mean, we've got like 40 songs we could do off just old material, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's never any sort of danger of becoming bored. I mean, sometimes it generally doesn't work, you know. I mean, one some nights, you know, like 1 hour every 10 hours, I'll just compile a set which is numbers we haven't done for a bit and just doesn't gel, you know.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people, including myself in the audience, noticed that the numbers maybe, I hate to say that we wanted to hear, because, I mean, the set was good enough that you didn't need anything you wanted to hear, but one night I did see you do How I Wrote Elastic Man, and but still, like, Fit and Working Again, you didn't do, or any of the shows I saw, and Fiery Jack, which is probably your best-known piece, at least here in New York, you know, I haven't seen you do yet.
Yeah, well, you see, when you do things like that, they just become crap.
Right.
You know? because that's how it becomes rubbish, isn't it? You can see it, you know, I even fall into it, you know, I think these certain songs I think have got to be in the set every night, you know. But if you do it more than 2-3 times, you notice they're getting crap, you know. I've noticed it with bands I've seen a couple of times, big bands, you know. But they don't suss it, they just go and play in what they think is a good number to communicate, you know. And when I notice that, I just drop the song, however popular it is, it's just not important, you know. And do it. I mean, I'm not in the snobbish way where I think you should not do anything that is popular or anything like that. I never think that way. But if the band isn't into it, or the band is stale and played it a lot, you know. I've seen so many bands, like, run through the fucking hits, you know. And they just, like, shut up on them. They were being better off not doing it, you know.
The Fall seem to have want to... Oh, we're going to have to go to a song. Okay. Well, we're going to go to a song right now. And this is yet another one off of Slate's. And it's called Prol Art Threat. Prol Art Threat from The Fall. And we are here now with Marky Smith and have been for a few minutes. You mentioned before that you do some writing. And has your writing appeared outside of the form of music?
Yeah, I've had stuff published in magazines. I write a lot. I write a bit of prose. But I find that very sort of constrictive scene, you know. It's very sort of class-ridden. In England it is. Writing for magazines is... It's no payment and that. It's, if you had a private income, if I had a private income, I could probably write loads of books, you know. But,
yeah.
I mean, that's why you're in rock, you know. That's why a lot of people go into rock and quick, you know, quick, and you can sort of earn something else by the way, rather than sitting and writing. I'm starting to write books, you know. I've got loads of books in my head, but I'm still two ways about it, you know. I don't miss.
Because there was this great Christmas message you wrote in the NME of about 100 words that I thought was the most fantastic thing I'd ever read in that paper. I was just really impressed by it.
Thank you very much. That's quite a blow. Nobody's ever said that to me about it.
No, I really...
I got loads of people ringing up going, what the fuck was that about?
You know. Do you expect that these books...
That's how I'd love to write, yeah.
Yeah.
I could write loads of stuff like that.
Because it's stuff that, like I was saying before, it's unintelligible until you realize you're not really, until you stop thinking about it, you know, then it becomes intelligible, you know, and just
it's
read
true
it
that, yeah.
And let it go into your eyes. And
which is what we're about, yeah, which is what my main sort of message is, you know. There's too many people that have got preconceived ideas before they approach anything. I mean, and music, ironically, is like one of the most like that. It's just ironic that The Fall is in music, you know.
And I guess on that note, we're going to end this edition of Music View. We've spent a lot. Hi, this is Timmy Selmer.
Mates, stablemate. It's on from Arise, therefore.